Hey, Buchanan! What you got there?
5 men were standing around outside the stage office. 6 saddled, sweat-matted horses stood by the hitch rail in front of them. The men's suit coats and Stetsons were liberally floured in trail dust. Deputy U.S. Marshal Walt Winslow had apparently gathered these men into a posse to ride out in search of the stage. Winslow had been sent from the territorial capital of Yankton to hold down the fort here in Tigerville since Sheriff Frank Stillwell's demise last year.
We thought she was dead!
Mel Fitzgerald was a small man in a bowler hat and holding an old double-barrel shotgun on his left shoulder. A stogie smoldered between his thin lips.
It was close.
Big Bill Todd, who was as big as Hunter but a good 10 years older, stepped up to the edge of the boardwalk.
We rode out last night about an hour after you was expected here in town. We found the coach. We saw poor old Charlie laying there in the trail. Brought him and the other fella to town. They're at the Undertaker's.
We tried to track you, but it got too dark.
City Councilman Warren Davenport was a tall, raw-boned man in early middle age.
Then this morning, the trail was too cold for any of us old farts to track you. He's in the manager's office now, palavering with Sullivan about what to do next. Reckon he won't have to do nothing next now, though. Except bury poor Charlie, that is.
Buchanan!
The station manager, Scotty Sullivan, stared in shock at the big blonde Jehu and his badly rumpled female charge. His round-framed spectacles glinted in the sunlight.
What the hell happened?
Sullivan quickly doffed his bowler hat and glanced sheepishly at Laura.
Pardon my French, please, miss.
Hunter swung down from his horse and tied the paint at the hitch rack. Bobby Lee leaped down off the dun's back and shot after a cat he'd spied on the street's opposite side.
What can I tell you, Scotty? We got hit. Charlie's dead. Bushwhacked.
U.S. Deputy Marshal Walt Winslow stepped up beside Sullivan in the open doorway of the stage manager's office. A short, gray-haired man who resembled a flinty-eyed Lutheran minister in his black suit, bullet-crowned black hat, crisp white shirt, and black foulard tie. An age-tarnished moon and star badge was pinned to his vest and peeked out from behind his left coat lapel. A thin, carefully trimmed mustache mantled his small mouth.
There's one more. Ike Talon.
Winslow widened his eyes and nodded once, slowly. He'd been after Talon ever since Talon had come to haunt the Black Hills trails.
Was Talon still out there?
Hunter reached up to help Laura down from the paint's back. When he'd set her gently on the ground, he took her hand and led her up onto the boardwalk. As he did, the 5 men in Winslow's posse doffed their hats and shuffled aside to make way for her and the Jehu, as they would for any 2 survivors of any fierce battle. Hunter moved up to where Sullivan and Winslow stood atop the 3 steps leading up to the office door.
I got a feeling I know where Talon is. I'll see to him.
He slid his glance to Scotty Sullivan.
For Charlie.
That's not your job, son.
I'm making it my job.
No vigilante justice.
Winslow smiled coldly and shook his head once, slowly.
Not on my watch.
Don't worry. He'll get his chance.
He looked at Sullivan and then at Laura.
Scotty, this is Miss Laura Myers. She was the other passenger on the stage.
Miss Myers, it's indeed a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine.
Laura took one step forward on her battered bare feet. The posse men were trying hard not to stare at the torn bodice of her dress.
But I am the new schoolteacher here in Tigerville, Mr.
This is Scotty Sullivan, Laura. Damn, I shouldn't have used her first name. We spent a night together on the run.
He saw all sorts of suppositions on the faces around them.
Mr. Sullivan!
Hunter's heartbeat quickened at the sound of the familiar voice.
Mr. Sullivan!
A scantily clad redhead with long dangling earrings pushed through a small crowd of men standing outside of the Justice of the Peace's office, listening in on Hunter's conversation with Sullivan. Annabelle Ludlow stepped up onto the boardwalk, looking flushed and shaken.
Scotty, is it true? Tell me Hunter's not...
She saw Buchanan and stopped dead in her tracks. Relief instantly washed over her, her eyes opening wide. She glanced to the pretty, albeit disheveled woman standing close beside Hunter and frowned. Buchanan held his left hand out to take Annabelle's hand in his, but she stumbled backward on her high heels, swung half around to face the street, then fell straight back into Hunter's outstretched arms.
Annabelle!
Passed out, poor girl.
Couldn't take the shock of it, I reckon.
Hunter crouched and lifted Annabelle off the boardwalk and up against his chest. He glanced a little sheepishly at the men around him. Laura gazed at the girl in Hunter's arms.
That's Annabelle?
Hunter looked from Sullivan to Laura.
I best tend to her. I'll get her into a bed over at Big Dan's and then come back to get you settled in over at the school, Laura. I mean, Miss Myers.
Laura gave him a sympathetic smile. Bill Todd rolled his eyes. Hunter stepped off the boardwalk and started across the street. He hurried ahead of a wagon moving toward him in one direction and pausing to let another wagon pass in front of him. When he'd let a couple of horseback riders pass, he hurried to the opposite side of the street. Hunter passed various shops, saloons, and pleasure houses. He looked ahead toward Big Dan's place again. Vaguely, Hunter noticed a figure in a red shirt on a big steel-dust horse riding away from Dan's. As he approached the saloon, Big Dan Delaney himself stepped out onto the boardwalk. Big Dan had worked the mines with picks, shovels, and water pumps, but you'd never know it by the look of him. He had built a stake for himself and bought the saloon, and now Big Dan played the part, or at least dressed the part, of a respectable businessman and gentleman of some repute. His sizable paunch strained against a three-piece green-checked suit, and he wielded a cherry walking stick with a carved wooden handle and smoked a meerschaum pipe.
Good Lord, what happened to my gal?
She's not your gal, Dan.
Hunter squeezed past Dan and through the saloon's batwing doors. Dan followed him.
Don't tell me she got hit on the street. Have you summoned a doctor?
She just fainted. I'm gonna put her in a bed.
Oh, thank heavens. She is my biggest moneymaker, and she never even takes a turn on her back.
Hunter's cheeks flushed with rage as he climbed the stairs to the musty second-floor hall. He saw a door standing partway open on his right. He kicked the door wide and stepped into the room. He glowered at a half-naked man lying belly down on the bed before him.
Christ!
Hunter stepped back into the hall and came face-to-face with a girl dressed only in a camisole, pantaloons, and pink slippers. There were feathers in her sleep-mussed hair.
Annabelle! Oh, my good heavens, what happened?
Hunter recognized the little brunette named Ginny. Once Annabelle had started working at Big Dan's, Hunter had learned everything he could about the place.
She'll be all right. Which room is hers?
Well, this way.
Ginny glanced back with concern at Annabelle as she led Hunter down the hall. She stopped in front of a door and opened it, then blocked the way in.
This one's Annabelle's. Are you sure she'll be all right?
Yes. Thanks, Jenny.
Well, what happened?
I'll let her tell it.
She didn't get hit out in the street, did she?
No.
I had a friend, Millie, who got flattened by a lumber dray. Deader than a doornail, poor girl.
Well, sorry to hear that. Can I get in, please?
Oh, sure.
Hunter carried Annabelle into the room and carefully laid her on the double brass bed. Ginny stepped into the doorway again and twisted a finger into her long, straight hair.
You're Hunter Buchanan, ain't you?
Hunter crouched over Annabelle, feeling her neck for a pulse.
That's right.
Her pulse felt strong.
How could you let Annabelle get away? She's just about the prettiest girl in town. Too bad she ain't working the line. Well, if she was, hey, she'd make a whole lot more money than she is just...
Annabelle's not a whore.
Ginny's eyes widened for a second, then narrowed. She stood straight in the doorway and put her fists on her hips.
Sometimes, you know, Mr. Buchanan, when a girl don't have a man to look after her, she often has to do whatever it takes just to survive.
Would you leave us alone, Ginny?
Gladly.
Hunter felt a hand close over his left one, which he'd wrapped around Annabelle's forearm. He looked down at Annabelle's hand atop his, then into her eyes.
Are you all right?
Annabelle sat up.
Are you?
I'm fine. No worse for wear.
Beaver Clavin said the stage was hit, and you were dead.
He was only half right.
Annabelle sagged back against the pillow.
Oh, Hunter.
Yeah, I know.
He glanced briefly at her skimpy outfit and shook his head.
Look at you.
It's a job.
Who is it?
It's just Jenny.
What do you want?
It's okay, Hunter. Open the door.
Jenny held out a glass of water.
For Annabelle.
Annabelle lifted her head from the pillow.
Thank you, Jenny.
Hunter took the glass of water, but Jenny stayed put, holding his gaze defiantly.
You gonna be all right, Annabelle? Big Dan's awful worried.
Sure he is. Tell Dan I'll be back down to tend the chili in a minute.
Jenny turned and shuffled back down the hall. Hunter returned to the bed, gave Annabelle the water, and sat down on the bed's edge.
Why'd you faint?
Annabelle shrugged and glanced at the window.
I was just so certain you were dead. Then when I saw you standing there, I don't know. I never figured myself for the fainting type of girl, but...
She returned her gaze to his.
I don't know what I'd do if anything happened to you, Hunter.
He smiled and squeezed her hand.
Nothing's gonna happen to me.
It came close.
Dumb luck. They caught us sitting like a rabbit in the grass.
How?
Long story. I'd best get back over to the stage office. You sure you're gonna be all right?
Who is she?
Hunter frowned.
Who's who?
You know very well.
Annabelle's expression hardened.
The pretty woman whose dress was hanging in ribbons off her shapely body.
Hunter felt his ears grow warm.
Oh, her. Well, she's the new school teacher here in Tigerville.
What's her name?
Laura Myers.
Pretty name. Married?
Not for long.
I see. Sounds right scandalous.
Hunter grinned.
Jealous?
Of course not. You're a free man. Just as I'm a free woman. That's the way you wanted it.
Only because I couldn't give you the life you deserve.
As if it's your place to decide what I deserve.
I have nothing but a few dollars in my pocket and the clothes on my back. Pa can't work, so I'm supporting him too. Most everything I make goes to the boarding house.
Sorrow overwhelmed Hunter's growing anger. He placed his hand on Annabelle's face, caressed her cheek with his thumb.
I'm off driving the stage more than I'm here in town. That's no life for a girl like you.
Tears glazed Annabelle's eyes, but she punched the bed with her fist.
Damn it all, Hunter. What happened to us?
Your father happened to us.
Hunter instantly regretted his words, but he couldn't stop himself. She stared up at him in shock.
You blame me, don't you?
No.
Yes, you do. I see it in your eyes.
It's not true, Annabelle.
Was it? No. He could never blame Annabelle for her father's actions. But maybe deep inside, he did harbor some resentment toward her for the mere fact that she was a Ludlow, and that the Ludlows had killed his two brothers, almost killed his father, burned their ranch, and ruined whatever future he and Annabelle might have had together. If they married now, in their penniless state, they'd soon share one of those sad marriages Hunter bore witness to every day around the old prospector shacks on Poverty Gulch and elsewhere in scattered claims throughout the Black Hills. They would be two sullen, sour, haggard people toiling for dimes, hating their lives, and soon hating each other. He couldn't abide such a life. Not for him and Annabelle. Annabelle placed her hand on his cheek now, gazing into his eyes as though trying to peer into his soul.
Oh, I think it's true, Hunter. You do blame me.
I don't.
Hunter rose from the bed and gazed down at her.
But don't you think it's time you stopped punishing me for my decision not to marry you and ruin your life?
She frowned, puzzled.
What are you talking about?
This.
Hunter gestured at her skimpy attire.
You took this job. You dress like this to punish me.
He shook his head defiantly.
It's not gonna work. I won't ruin everything just because you've chosen to humiliate yourself in public. Go home, Annabelle. Your father can give you the life you deserve. I hate the bastard, but he can give you a better life than I can.
Annabelle's face hardened with rage.
You go to hell, Hunter Buchanan.
All right. That's the last I'll say on the subject. You live however you want to live. I wash my hands of you.
Annabelle sat up and dropped her feet to the floor.
You go to hell!
Hunter strode to the door, stopped, and turned back to her. He glanced at her corset again, at her long legs clad in sheer, skin-colored stockings.
You be careful, Annabelle. If you start enjoying this life, how men look at you and fawn over you, you might not find a way out of it.
As he headed for the stairs, Annabelle rushed into the hall.
Go to hell with Miss Myers, and don't you ever come back, you bastard!
Fuming, Hunter descended the stairs to Big Dan's main drinking hall. Dan stood at the bar, a beer, a shot of whiskey, and his opera hat before him. Ginny sat at a table near the pot-bellied stove in the room's center, smoking a cigarette. She hunched as though chilled. Both pimp and whore stared dubiously at him. Embarrassed by the outburst they'd obviously overheard upstairs, Hunter continued past them toward the exit. A four-legged creature scurried into the saloon beneath the batwing doors. Hunter stopped in his tracks.
Bobby Lee, what in tarnation?
Big Dan took his stogie from his mouth and knocked ash into a dish on the bar.
That's all right. We've gotten used to that brush wolf in here. Follows the little gal around like a loyal dog. Shows his teeth at all the men who get too handsy. Oh, I don't mind. Keeps them in line. Besides, some of the boys regard him as a curiosity. A brush wolf in a saloon following around the purtiest little gal in Tigerville.
He winked at Buchanan.
Word gets around, draws in customers.
Bobby Lee was sniffing at the floor like a dog on a scent. He must have caught the scent he was after, because he suddenly shot past Hunter, then bolted up the stairs. Hunter turned around to scowl after the coyote.
Well, I'll be damned. I was wondering where he disappeared to. I thought he was out hunting rabbits. That disloyal little snipe.
He strode to the door and continued down the boardwalk until he was once again across from the stage office. It was easier to cross the street now that he wasn't carrying someone he loved. He saw that the small crowd fronting the stage manager's office had dispersed. Laura was no longer there either. Neither was the dun horse hauling the dead killers. The only ones still present were Marshall Winslow and the stage manager, Scotty Sullivan. As Hunter mounted the boardwalk, he looked around.
Where's the teacher?
Sullivan and Winslow turned to him.
We figured you had enough woman trouble on your hands, Buchanan. I had Warren Davenport take her over to the school in that fancy chaise of his and help her get settled in. I'm having the luggage from the stage hauled back to town in a wagon. She and her portmanteaus should be reunited soon.
Dr. Dahl should take a look at her.
Well, I suggested it. She wouldn't hear of it.
Sullivan glanced at Winslow with a twinkle in his eye before smiling at Hunter.
Pretty woman. She looked a mite reluctant to leave with Davenport. Like, maybe she'd prefer you introduced her to her new place of employment.
Maybe you, curled her pretty toes for her last night?
He shot both men a look, eyes cold. Hunter stepped off the boardwalk and started walking south.
Where are you headed, Buchanan?
Hunter ignored Marshall Winslow.
Charlie is dead. Annabelle is slinging drinks in a cat house. What next?
Immersed in his own dark thoughts, he barely noticed the usual ruckus of the street around him until he spied a shingle marked Dr. Norton Dahl, M.D. He climbed a staircase on the outside of the building until he reached the landing on the second floor. He tried the doorknob. Locked. He could smell cigarette smoke oozing through the vertical cracks between the boards.
Ah! Oh, I'm coming, for God's sake!
A large, round, bespectacled eye peered around the edge of the door.
By God, you better have money, or your next stop is the Bone Orchard.
The eye widened in recognition. A loosely rolled quirly dangled from one corner of the medico's mustached mouth.
Oh, Buchanan! I'm damn tired of not getting paid. I gotta eat too, same as everyone else.
Who didn't pay you?
Last fella I treated.
Did he have a bullet in his arm? A big bald fella with a walrus mustache?
Oh, yeah. Took me almost an hour to dig out that slug. I had to call three men in from the street to hold him down, or I'd likely have cut his arm off.
Hunter craned his neck, trying to see into the doctor's office.
Is he still here?
Oh, no. He should be. Lost a lot of blood. He stumbled out of here without paying me one bloody cent, muttering something about how he'd get better treatment at the payday club. I told him, go on over to the payday and die howling from the pony drip, and I would dance a happy little jig on his grave.
Thanks, Doc.
Hunter whipped around and started down the stairs.
Hey, the word go around is you're dead.
Not quite, Doc.
Hunter negotiated his way across the busy main street again, feeling like he needed a drink. He'd get one soon to settle his nerves. First, though, he intended to kill Ike Talon, which would likely settle his nerves just fine. The payday was located on the corner of 2nd Street and 3rd Avenue. It had been the first saloon and hotel in Tigerville, but now the town's growing heart had shifted to the east, abandoning and antiquating the place. Its second floor was a pleasure parlor and opium den. You patronized the payday when you'd been kicked out of every other house in town, or didn't have the coin for better busthead and more attractive or talented women. Hunter stepped over a man passed out on the front step and pushed through the bat wings. He took a quick look around at the shabby saloon boasting a half dozen tables, at which a half dozen sullen men, mostly miners and ore haulers, nursed drinks and smoked. Two old-timers were playing checkers. A tall, gaunt man stood behind the bar with pomaded hair and a pinstriped shirt and bow tie. He stared at Hunter without expression. The man's chest jerked as though something had suddenly come alive inside him, and he brought a white handkerchief to his mouth. The handkerchief was already spotted red. When he pulled it away from his mouth, it was redder. Not seeing Talon in the dingy, smoky shadows around him, Hunter moved into the room and stopped 6 feet from the bar.
I'm looking for a big man, bald-headed gent with a walrus mustache.
The barman frowned and slid his gaze to the stairs on his right.
Upstairs! End of the hall on the left!
Hunter swung around and crossed the room to the stairs. He ascended the steps two at a time, but moved quietly on the balls of his feet. He stopped on the landing. The only illumination was light coming through a filthy window at the end of the hallway. The air was smoky. Any thoughts of sneaking up on Talon flew out the filthy window. Hunter continued and stopped at the last door on his left, tilted his head toward the upper panel.
What are you doing, hon? You best stay in bed and...
Shut up, you damn fool!
Hunter stepped back and drew the Lamat. Talon was clad in only red long handles and a gun belt and pistol. His left arm was in a bloody sling. With a savage grin, he raised a double-barreled shotgun with his right arm. Hunter threw himself to the left and ducked. Splinters rained down on his head from the hole in the wall above him. Hunter rose to his knee and thrust the Lamat through the open door in time to see Ike Talon drop the shotgun and hurl himself toward the window. Hunter ran across the room and poked the Lamat through the broken window. Talon struggled to his feet on a secondary roof below the second floor and raised a Colt revolver in his right fist. Hunter ducked. The mirror over the dresser was now an empty frame.
Christ almighty, lady, shut up!
Hunter poked the Lamat out the broken window again. Talon was running along the roof to the far edge. One round hit the edge of the roof, and the other flew where Talon had been before he jumped off. Hunter leaped through the window, landed on the roof 10 feet below, rose and ran to the edge where Talon had disappeared. He raised the Lamat and tracked Talon as the man ran, limping down the alley. Talon had ducked around the corner just in time.
Damn it!
Talon slid his grinning face back around the corner of the building, made a lewd gesture, then ducked back out of sight.
Bastard!
Hunter quickly set about replacing the Lamat's spent cartridges. Then he glanced below and saw the broken wooden packing crates that had cushioned Talon's fall. Figuring they would do the same for him, he leaped off the edge of the roof. Hunter expertly rolled on his shoulder to absorb the impact, gained his feet, and ran down the length of the alley. He stopped near the front corner of the building and chanced to look around the wall. Talon was dashing between two buildings roughly 50 yards along the narrow street. He was heading east, back toward the main drag.
He's gonna try to lose himself in the Dakota Avenue crowds.
Hunter pushed away from the brick building and ran north. He ran through the same break Talon had used, crossed another side street, then ran through another break, frightening a trash, scrounging cur that ran away with its tail between its legs. When Hunter surfaced from the break, he found himself on Dakota Avenue, confronted by a swelter of dusty traffic. Before him was an enormous ore wagon pulled by 6 draft horses. When it had passed, Hunter looked around, catching a brief glimpse of red in the roiling dust cloud ahead and on his right. As he gained on the fleeing figure, Ike Talon glanced over his left shoulder. He stopped and wheeled, whipping up his revolver. The bullet hit a support post to Hunter's left. Hunter straightened, extended the lamat, and steadied the big popper in his right hand. Talon turned and ran nearly straight north down the middle of the street. Talon grabbed the back of his left leg and fell. Hunter ran forward.
Whoa!
He dove beneath a parked farm wagon when Talon whipped his gun around again.
Son of a bitch!
The killer swiftly gained his feet and ran forward, dragging his left leg. He stopped as the first 2 horses of a 4-horse hitch pulling a mine supply wagon appeared out of the dust.
Out of the way, you simple fool!
The burly teamster sitting on the driver's seat hauled back on the reins just before the first 2 horses pulled into Talon. The killer disappeared completely from Hunter's view.
Whoa, you mean teenage!
As the wagon slowed, out from beneath it rolled the dusty, bedraggled form of Ike Talon. Talon rolled onto his belly and lay writhing like a gutshot dog. Hunter was on his feet and regarded the battered killer.
Good. He's still alive.
Traffic had come to a standstill to the north and south. The dust still sifted over Talon. The driver of the wagon jumped to the ground and scurried toward him, duster flopping at his sides.
Oh, lordy. I didn't see you there, pard.
Hunter walked out into the street. The driver looked at him from beneath the brim of his weather-stained sombrero.
I didn't see him. Honest, I didn't. But what blame fool runs down Dakota Avenue half-dressed this time of day?
A dead one.
Hunter kicked Talon onto his back. His right arm was broken. Hunter saw the telltale bulge.
How you feeling, Ike?
Don't just stand there. Call the doc. Call the doc!
After what you did to him, I don't think the doc is going to give you a headache powder.
Hunter pressed his boot down on Talon's broken right arm. Talon's eyes opened wide, and all the blood drained out of his face.
How's that feel, Ike? Doesn't look too good. But then Charlie Anders didn't look too good laying out on that trail after you ambushed him, killing him in cold blood.
The mule skinner looked at Hunter slack-jawed, then backed away slowly.
Holy crap in the deacon's privy. You two got history.
He continued to back away. Hunter didn't notice. He raised the lamat, angling it down at a 45-degree angle, and drew a bead on Talon's right arm.
What are you? No!
That was for Charlie.
He took aim at the other arm, near the previous wound.
That was for the drummer.
Stop! Let me go, damn you!
Hunter took aim at Talon's right knee.
That was for the young lady your men tried to savage.
Stop! You're crazy!
I can't stop, Ike. I still got 1 bullet left.
Hunter aimed the lamat at Talon's forehead.
This one is for me.
Talon lay in a spreading pool of blood with a stupid cross-eyed expression on his meaty face. Hunter looked around. He'd been so intent on making Ike Talon pay for his sins that he hadn't realized a large crowd had gathered in a complete circle around him, about 20 feet away. Men, women, children, and even a few dogs stared at him in wide-eyed fascination. One face in particular caught Hunter's attention. Annabelle's. He hadn't realized he was standing out in front of Big Dan's saloon. Annabelle stood on the boardwalk with Ginny and Big Dan and several of Big Dan's regulars, clutching beers in their fists. Bobby Lee sat at her feet, his copper eyes on Hunter. Annabelle looked at Hunter with a mixture of sadness and revulsion. Slowly, she turned away and walked back into Big Dan's. Bobby Lee followed her.
All right, holster that hog leg.
Marshal Walt Winslow stepped out from the crowd. He held a double-barrel shotgun aimed at Hunter's belly.
You're under arrest, Buchanan. That was cold-blooded murder.
Hunter saw another badge-wearing man flanking Winslow, one hand on his holstered revolver. That was Roy Birmingham, another federal marshal assigned to the Black Hills. He was Winslow's age, early 60s, a stout beer barrel of a man in a black suit, black slouch hat, and a red foulard tie. A shaggy gray mustache concealed his mouth beneath a flat-tipped, bright red nose, upon which little round spectacles perched, brightly reflecting the sun. Hunter glared at Winslow, holding the shotgun on him.
You're gonna arrest me for killing this killer?
Well, that's right. It don't matter if he deserved it or not. You murdered the man, Buchanan. I can't let that go.
Winslow slid his flinty gaze toward two little boys standing in the crowd in front of their mother.
What kind of a lesson would that be for the children? Now holster the hog leg.
Hunter looked at the boys and their mother, who gazed at him with dark fascination. He holstered the Lamat. The new schoolhouse was not far from the center of town, but to Laura Myers, the trip seemed to take an eternity. She had been given a blanket to cover the shredded bodice of her dress, but in the leering presence of Warren Davenport, she felt as indecent as every soiled dove she had seen on the balconies of the pleasure houses that lined the main street of Tigerville. Still, it was a relief to get away from that crude, dirty, smoky, stinky, violent little cesspool. It also lifted her spirits to see the new schoolhouse. The town council had obviously put some effort into the simple pine structure, with a hipped roof and a closed front porch rising from a half dozen steps. A bell tower jutted from the roof of the porch. A rope for ringing the bell hung down over the top step. But then Davenport had guided his buggy past the school to the house the town had provided for her, and her spirits plummeted again like a rock down a dry well.
I know I have the key somewhere.
Warren Davenport patted his pockets nervously as they stood on the sagging step in front of the weathered door.
Aha!
He finally brought forth an ancient rusted key and bared his large, square, discolored teeth.
Seems to be a bit recalcitrant. I'll be happy to come back out here and oil that up for you. There we are.
Davenport stepped into the cabin. Laura stood in the open doorway, staring into her new home. The shack was maybe a little larger than her and Jonathan's bedroom back home, but not by much. It was a single room with a kitchen area to the right, with a small stove, an eating table with a couple of rustic, sagging chairs, shelves housing rudimentary utensils, and a parlor area, if you could call it that, to the left. There was a rocking chair, a horsehair sofa that sagged badly in the middle, and a small wooden tea table carved from a log. To the rear of the parlor area and abutting the left and rear walls lay a small bed covered in threadbare wool blankets.
See? Not so bad, eh?
Davenport smiled broadly, and for the umpteenth time his eyes danced over Laura, making her skin crawl. She stepped into the cabin. The rough wood floor was partly covered by a couple of sun-faded, dusty, sour-smelling hemp rugs.
No, not bad at all.
She wished she'd waited for Hunter, but he'd quite literally had his hands full with that saloon girl who'd passed out at the sight of him. Davenport pointed to a pump head and handle poking up out of the plank cupboard against the cabin's back wall.
You see, there's an indoor spigot. Oh, Homer Lasky lived here until he died about 5 years ago. He was a miner, and folks thought he was, well, kind of loco. But he had the good sense to dig well under the cabin.
Yes, all the comforts of home.
Laura stepped forward and poked her hand out of the blanket draping her shoulders to rake it across the 3x4-foot eating table. The tip of her finger was gray-black with dust and grime. She swallowed down a hard knot of homesickness, shook her head to clear the raw emotions swirling around in her brain, then tossed her hair back and turned her wooden smile to the big man hovering over her.
Home, sweet home.
See? I knew you'd like it.
I do. Now, if you'll forgive me, Mr. Davenport, I'd really like to clean myself up a bit.
Oh, you're wanting to be alone, of course.
Instead of retreating to the door, he lingered, a smile working at the muscles in his hard, unevenly featured face. He opened his mouth to speak, then, as if in afterthought, reached up to remove his hat from his head.
Miss Myers, I have an idea. Won't you join me for dinner this evening?
What?
Well, I mean, I did send a boy from the grocery store over with the basics. Sugar, flour, and coffee, that sort of thing. But surely you're not up to cooking so soon after arriving. After all you've been through, I could take you to dinner at the Imperial. It's a hotel. Best victuals in town. I can introduce you to a couple of the other school board members who dine there regularly.
That's a generous offer, Mr. Davenport, but I think I'm just going to take a long hot bath, put some salve on my feet, and go to bed early. Tomorrow I'll head downtown for groceries and stock the larder, so to speak.
I'd be happy to send the boy from the grocery store. If you'd like to make out a list, I could stop by later and pick it up.
Oh, no, thank you, Mr. Davenport. I like to do my own shopping.
That wasn't true. She and Jonathan had always had a servant for such tedium, but she didn't want this scoundrel to think she needed him for anything. Why could he not see what condition she was in? She was exposed, bedraggled, and filthy. She had not seen her face since her horrible ordeal the day before, but she could feel the swelling of the black eye she had gotten from the animal who had almost ravaged her. Was this great gangly brute so dense that he couldn't realize how desperately she needed to clean her injured feet and rest her bruised body? Despite her best efforts to ignore it, thoughts of her feet caused Hunter Buchanan to suddenly slip into her mind. Was that what, or whom, she was wanting to go to sleep and dream about? Was the contrast with her Viking warrior savior what made Warren Davenport look so bedraggled and unappealing?
Miss Myers? Miss Myers! Are you all right, Miss Myers?
She snapped out of her trance, her cheeks tingling with what she was sure was a crimson flush.
I'm sorry, Mr. Davenport. I'm afraid I just feel a little dizzy, is all. It must be the exhaustion.
Phew! For a minute there, I thought you were going to pull what Miss Ludlow pulled in front of the stage manager's office.
Yes, yes. So did I. I hate to be rude, Mr. Davenport. I do appreciate the ride over here and all, but I'm afraid...
Oh, of course. I'll take my leave. But don't you worry. I'll stop by to check on you later. Just to, make sure your luggage arrived safely and all.
Oh, that won't be necessary.
No problem at all, Miss Myers. Well, then?
Leave! Go! Dear God in heaven, why are you still here?
Just so as you know, Miss Myers.
Yes, Mr. Davenport?
Just so as you know, Miss Myers, I am a widower. Just so you know that, well, there won't be anything improper when we do have dinner together.
He cast her a broad smile, an unsettling smile, a smile with an off-putting edge to it. It was as though he'd just shown her a knife. Laura felt a sudden wave of nausea.
Good day now, teacher.
He nodded, winked, put on his hat, and walked to the door. Laura stood rigidly, clutching her blanket around her.
Get up!
She stayed that way until she could no longer hear the buggy's wheels rolling on the uneven road. Finally, she walked to the kitchen table, lowered herself into a chair, and laid her head on her folded arms.
Get in there, you damn miscreant! Hanging's too good for you, you know that?
Walt Winslow rammed his shotgun into Hunter's back.
Ow! What the hell's gotten into you, Winslow? Talon had it coming. He killed Charlie.
That don't matter.
Roy Birmingham closed the office door behind them.
He was down and he was no longer armed, and you still shot him anyway.
Get in there!
Winslow jerked the shotgun toward one of the four cells lined up against the squat stone building's rear wall. Only one cell was occupied by an old wiry gent, probably a prospector, with a long bib beard. The man was sound asleep on one of the cell's two cots. Reluctantly, Hunter stepped into the cell left of the one housing the prospector. Winslow slammed the door behind Hunter, who swung around to face the marshal.
You got any more weapons on you?
Winslow had already confiscated Hunter's Lamat and Bowie knife.
No.
You sure?
I said so, didn't I?
I should make you take your boots off.
No, don't do that.
Birmingham took a seat in Winslow's swivel chair.
No one's got smellier feet than a damn rebel.
He leaned back and smiled.
I'm gonna dance at his hanging. I might even have a beer, though the doc says I can only drink on the rare special occasion.
Winslow finally lowered the shotgun.
I'll buy.
You were friends with Charlie too, Winslow. Hell, everybody was friends with Charlie.
That doesn't mean you can break the law. Not in front of me in the whole damn town.
You didn't see what they did to him. Bushwhacked him. Him and the drummer. Two of them dragged the girl off into the woods.
I'm sure they did.
Winslow relaxed into a straight-backed chair by his desk.
That's talent for you.
He leaned his shotgun against the desk and took a slender cheroot from a box on the desktop.
You got a light, Roy?
I do.
Birmingham dug a lucifer from the breast pocket of his suit coat, scratched it to life on the top of Winslow's desk, and held it to the end of the marshal's cigar. Hunter sat on one of the cots and put his head in his hands. He supposed Winslow and Birmingham were right. He had killed Talon after the man was down. Not only killed him, but tortured him, right in front of half the town.
Now I'm gonna hang, and old Angus will be alone. Who will look after him? Who will look after Annabelle?
He jerked his head up. He hadn't realized that both deputy U.S. Marshals had moved up to stand just outside his cell, staring in at him, their brows raised skeptically.
What the hell do you two want? If you think I'm gonna piss myself, you're gonna have to wait till after the trap door drops.
We've been thinking, Roy and me.
Yeah? That's a first.
All sass, ain't you? Typical Buchanan.
Like I said, we've been thinking it over.
Thinking what over?
The hanging.
We're ready to make you a deal. You don't deserve it, but we find ourselves in kind of a tight spot, Walt and me.
Hunter rose from the cot and walked over to the cell door.
I'm listening.
You see, Roy and I have been assigned to check out whiskey runners over on the Sioux Reservation. That means we have to leave Tigerville, and since I have yet to find a man willing to occupy this office, I have no one to leave in charge.
Winslow dug a tin badge out of his vest pocket and held it up between his fingers.
Till now.
Hunter frowned at the badge, then shifted his incredulous stare to Winslow.
You mean you want me to be the new town marshal?
Just till Walt here gets back to Tigerville.
Well, unless you want to wear that star full time. Looks like I'm gonna have to look out of town for a man, and that's a heap of paper pushing nonsense I don't have time for. That trouble you were involved in last year, all them deputies of Stillwell's getting killed, then the unfortunate circumstances of the last town marshal's unexpected expiration?
You mean Lon Lonigan getting shot in the back over at the library by a drunk whore?
Birmingham brushed his hand across his mustache.
Indeed. The whole damn mess has made it a mite difficult to find a lawman. At least a good one. One who won't go and get himself shot the moment he steps out onto the boardwalk.
Winslow extended the badge through the bars of the cell door.
Go ahead, kid. Pin that to your shirt. Just till I get back. Who knows? You might even warm to the job. Better pay than your stage driving job and without the dust and holdups.
How much?
Huh?
How much you offering?
Oh, say...
Winslow glanced at Birmingham.
How about 30 a month? A little steep, but I think the city fathers would agree to that amount.
The stage line pays me 35 a month.
They do?
You know they do.
All right. How about 40 a month?
50 or call the hangman. Hanging would be quicker. Lonigan lingered for 3 days after the doc cut that bullet out of his liver.
All right, 50 it is. When I talk to the city council, I'll call it hazard pay. They shouldn't balk, given the circumstances.
Winslow waved the badge at Hunter.
Here you go, kid. Deal's a deal.
Hunter frowned down at the badge.
Why do I feel like I've just been cheated by a crooked faro dealer?
Slowly, he plucked the badge out of Winslow's hand. Birmingham tossed Winslow a big ring of keys.
Congratulations on the new job, kid.
Winslow smiled and held out the ring of keys.
Here, these are yours.
Good luck.
Winslow hung the keys from a hook on the wall, and the two lawmen walked to the door. Hunter noticed that shotguns, bedrolls, and other gear were sitting there waiting for them.
Yep, I've been had, all right.
Hunter remained standing inside the cell, the badge in his hand. He looked from the badge to the two gray-headed lawmen grabbing their gear.
You two weren't planning on hanging me at all, were you?
For killing Ike Talon? Hell no! Old Ike's been needing killing since he graduated from Rubber Pants.
Rubber Pants! Good one, Walt!
I got a million of them, Roy.
Birmingham hustled through the door and out to where two saddled horses were waiting for him and Winslow at the hitch rack.
See you when we get back, kid.
Winslow turned toward the door, then turned back.
Oh, and just a word of advice. Stay out of the library unless absolutely necessary. I've been there myself, and poor old Lonigan didn't have a chance.
Hunter walked out of the cell and over to the open office door. Both oldsters were strapping their bedrolls to their saddles and shoving their rifles into their saddle scabbards. They mounted their horses and reined them around. Hunter watched them disappear into the general chaos of Dakota Street, then looked at the badge in his hand.
I got a feeling they were prepared to offer me better pay, too, damn it.